Well, now that we've gotten your attention by flashing the lights on and off, I'll say welcome to the Michiana Adventist Farm.
35 years ago, he was teaching.
Today's program is Where Do My Donations Go? The conversation on SDA financial structure, presented by Dr. Ann Gibson, who is Professor Emeritus in the School of Business. These facilities, we are able to hold these programs. After her presentation, Alyssa Williams will be, as usual, going around with a wireless mic so you can ask questions and make comments. But before we start, I'd like to have a word of prayer. Marvin Budd is going to ask the Lord's blessing on our meeting.
Loving Heavenly Father, thank you for bringing us here this afternoon. As you have said, counsel is yours. We come here to listen, learn, and hopefully to do what is right in your eyes, and not everyone going their own way. We ask your blessing on our university and on our church, and on the individual believers who have followed you, trusting all. In Jesus' holy name.
Our next forum program is in January, January 21. Dr. Denny Fortin, the former dean of the seminary and now professor of historical theology in the seminary, will be discussing his new book, Steps to Christ, at 125, which means that the 125th anniversary of the publication of Steps to Christ is coming up. Thanks. And he has put together a anniversary edition, which the Andrews University Press is publishing for the 125th anniversary. And in it, he has a lot of historical background. He discusses how it was compiled from various sources by Marion Davis, one of Mrs. White's assistants. He has essays trying to put the book in the context of the theological world of the time and so on. So it should be a different take on Steps to Christ, but I think it'll be very interesting and illuminating, and he's certainly in a good position to shed light for us. Then on February 11, 2017, Garth Woodruff from the AU Ag Department is going to speak on breaking barriers in food equity. And just remind you that there's a sheet to sign up if you'd like to get emails about our programs. And we do appreciate all the people that work behind the scenes to help make these programs happen. Jim Harris down here on the front row, I guess that's in front of the scene, but anyway, he does a lot of things behind the scene too with the website and so on. Daryl Legault from the School of Business has been very helpful to us. And, Kathy Cadell and Debbie Robertson and Terry Coffins that help get the word out in various publicity forums. And I guess at the end of the year, I just say that we're thankful for those of you who have contributed financially to helping our forum program along. We always welcome your tax-deductible contributions if you feel so inclined. Well, in looking at the General Conference website, as best I could figure, the Adventist Church takes in about $3.5 billion of funds a year, and I'm sure that it depends on how you tabulate it and what you include. But anyway, it's a fair chunk of money. Where do these funds come from? Where do they go? How do they get there? What is the financial structure of the SDA Church? Well, to give us a glimpse into this, we have the person who I've been told knows more about than anybody else on the planet, Dr. Ann Gibson, who most of you probably know. She used to be the dean of the School of Business here, professor of accounting. She's a CPA. In addition to teaching at multiple institutions of higher education, she's worked at, as all sorts of financial things, from bookkeeper to accountant to financial educator to board members and so on. So she is involved with the General Conference Treasury Department, where she runs their website, moneywise.adventist.org. If any of you have the slightest interest in these sort of things, you should check that website out, because you can spend hours surfing through all sorts of educational and informational materials. I was quite impressed and got hooked when I checked it out. She has developed various workshops and seminars to try to increase the professional level of financial management, financial handling in the SDA Church, giving many, many training sessions across North America and around the world. And could go on, but let's just say we're glad to have you here and the time is yours.
Thank you so much for coming. It would be impossible to have a conversation if there weren't people to have a conversation with. So thank you so much for coming, and I'm so glad that you're here. I wanted to, because I'm an accountant, give you a few facts and figures to start out. And I don't know how this is working. Is it working?
Hello?
He's working on it.
If I just hold it, is it better?
Yes.
Keep talking.
Shall I use the mic? Oh, that works there. That's better.
No.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to be giving a few facts.
Oh.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Thanks. There we go. I know it's better. Thanks. I wanted to give you a few facts and figures, because being an accountant, that's my thing. But then I want us to have a conversation based on some of the things that I want to share with you. So while I'm presenting these facts and figures, I encourage you to think about your questions, and then either I'll pass them back to somebody else in the audience. I am not nearly as authoritative as I've been introduced as being, but it's very gracious, and we'll see what happens as we go forward. But I did want to share information with you about what happens to your donations. Where do they come from? And more importantly, where do they go? I've organized this presentation to start out with, first of all, reviewing the financial structure of the church. That will indeed be a review. I think most of us are fairly familiar with that, but I do want to review it with you for starts. And then I have specific information with permission from the North American division, our division, which may be of most interest to us to give us some kind of a feel, although certainly what happens in one division is very similar to what happens in other divisions around the world. So first, a review of the structure. You know, of course, that the most important part of the structure is the local congregation. That's where the money starts. That's where it comes from. And all of the people who make up that local congregation are the most important part of the church. And I really cannot stress that enough. Without the local congregation and the people in the pew, none of it works. None of it works. So that's where it starts, and that's the most important factor. The next area of structure is the local conferences. Because I'm going to focus on the North American division, I just noted here there are 57 conferences in the North American division. The next portion of the structure is the union level, and again, using the North American division as an example, there are 9 unions in the NAD. And then there is the division,
We know the most closest one to us is the North American division, but there are 13 divisions worldwide. And finally, the General Conference, which is located in Washington, D.C. So when we think about the organized ecclesiastical structure of the church, this is what it looks like. In addition to this, of course, because we're here at Andrews University, we know there are institutions, there are colleges and universities, there are publishing houses, there are food factories, there are academies, there are many, many other institutions around the church. But if we look at the ecclesiastical structure, it looks like this. The total membership of the church is at 2015, using the GC Archives and Statistics Report, 19.1 million. And the membership of these divisions, I've listed it here just for our information and for discussion to think about where are these members located. We talk about them, it's a big number, but where do they live? So I've listed this in the order of quantity of population of members, starting with the largest division population-wise, Inter-America, which is mostly to the direct south of us, then the Southern Africa Indian Ocean, think South Africa and that particular part of Africa, East Central Africa, headquarters are located in Kenya, so you can think about that portion of Africa, then South America, Southern Asia, Southern Asia Pacific. Think particularly there, Philippines, their headquarters are in the Philippines. Think Indonesia, Southeast Asia, gives you a bit of a geographic feel for that one. And then North America. Smaller ones, Northern Asia Pacific, think Japan, Korea, and China as the primary countries. West Central Africa, think to the west part of Africa there with headquarters in Abidjan, Ivory Coast. South Pacific is Australia and the islands. Inter-European, headquarters are in Switzerland, so think of that part of Europe. Euro-Asia, headquarters Moscow, think the former USSR. Trans-European, Northern Europe and the former Yugoslavian countries. And then there are two attached areas, Middle East, North Africa, headquartered in Lebanon, and the Israeli field. So that gives you some idea of the membership of the church and where they are located. Then for our interest sake, what about the money side? About, as Art already mentioned, 3.5 billion, 2.5 billion in tithe. As I noted here, the first number, and you'll see this on the next slide as well, the first number is total tithe, and the second number is total tithe, mission offerings, intra-division offerings, and local church offerings. So the big number includes all of those offerings, the smaller number is tithe. So taking a look at the divisions again, we're interested in where is the money. And as you well would imagine, number one is North America. No surprise, I don't think, to anybody. 965.5 million for tithe and 1.5 billion for total offerings. Remember, that also includes local church. So that's the big total. Next, South America, then Inter-America, Inter-European, South Pacific, Southern Africa, Indian Ocean, and Northern Asia Pacific. Going on, Southern Asia Pacific, Trans-Europe, East Central Africa, Euro-Asia, West Central Africa, Southern Asia, Middle East, North Africa, and Israeli field. I think if you look at these numbers, you can both understand it is, to some extent, in some areas, a function of the number of people who are members of the church, but probably much more important, what's driving this is the economic development of that part of the world. So there are parts of the world where even if they give everything that they can give, it's not a lot of money because the economic development of that area is much lower than in other parts of the world. So overall, the church is organized for worldwide mission, and GC Tide, as I've already noted, is $2.5 billion. The intent of the way that the church organizes its financial structure is to share the resources around the world so that they can supply funding where it is needed as the opportunity for mission develops. So what initially started out, if you think historically about the Adventist Church, is a very small church located primarily in North America. And as they gave and developed, and Jay and Andrews is our best example since we're sitting at Andrews University, to send people to other parts of the world in order to strengthen mission, the money came from those various areas to flow to other areas. So the idea behind the financial structure, to bring the money in and to use it wherever it is needed to expand the mission. The intent, however, includes local decision making. The idea behind that is the money will flow up, but it will flow down. In other words, as I'm going to show you in a minute with the North American Division, the decisions about what happens in North America are North American decisions. Money which is then retained in the conferences is a local conference decision. Money retained in the union is a local union decision. So the idea is it's also designed that there is general decision making happening at the local level where you know and understand what those needs are. The GC will use its share of the world income, if we think about the total money going to the GC, primarily for giving regular and special appropriations to divisions and GC institutions. One of those institutions that receives money as a special appropriation is Andrews University. So we are part of recipients of money which has flowed to the General Conference, which the General Conference then returns for specific uses at Andrews. The GC will also use its money to support missionaries. It will also use its money for evangelism and outreach, for publications and materials. They always put aside something every year for GC sessions so that they're planning ahead, because we know that comes every 5 years. They do things like support the SDA accounting software around the world so that the financial statements can talk to each other and everybody gets the same idea and puts it together in the same format. There's a long list of things, but this gives you some examples of the big areas that would be included. And of course, the operating expenses of the GC itself, which by policy are held to be no more than 2% of gross tithes. Usually the GC comes in under that for administrative, but that is by policy the maximum that the GC can spend for operating expenses. Now I want to take a look, just again, to give you more information so you get the general idea at what happens with one division, the North American Division. This slide and some of the others that look like this come directly from Mike Jameson, who is the Associate Treasurer of the NAD. And I want to be sure that Mike gets full credit for the slides which he told me that I could share with you today. These are the slides that he prepared for the North American Division year-end meetings. So this is the kind of stuff he would have reported, but he gave me permission to share with you, but I left them in this kind of format, so it's very clear which ones are the ones that Mike let me use. So you can see here, the North American Division's tithe was $983.25 million. Of that total,
$810 million, almost $811 million, was kept at the local conferences and the unions across North America. That's roughly 82.5% stayed in the local conference and unions. And about 17.5% was remitted on to the NAD. So most of the money, this is time that I'm talking about here, stays at the local level. Again, remember that the decisions about how to use that will be done at the local level. Of that $172.5 million, just a reminder, 100% of the local congregation's tithe will go to the local conference, and then that goes on to be retained by the local conference or the union, and 17.5 goes on to the NAD. Of that $172 million that is sent on to the NAD, again, a slide from Mike. This tells you what did they do with it. This is the part that went on to the NAD. So you can see there that they used for themselves $30 million, the green bar there, which I'm going to explain a little more in a minute. $14 million went for evangelism reversion. That means it went back to the unions or local conferences for them to use specifically for evangelism. The same would be true for special assistance. That too would have gone back to the local conferences or unions. Then the Adventist Media Center, auditing services, the interns and the seminary, $3.8 million. The DB plant extra deposit, $5.7 million. I think any of us who worked for the church are aware of the fact that in 2000, the church moved to a defined contribution retirement plan and stopped the defined benefit plan. But the defined benefit plan needs to continue to be funded. So all organizations, including Andrews, put in an extra amount to continue to fund that defined benefit plan. So does the NAD. The NAD puts in a large amount because there are institutions, think, for example, the best example, academies, which honestly don't have any extra money. So the NAD is basically saying, we're going to put this in to that defined benefit so that the retirees who gave their service to the church for their life work are given what they were promised with respect to pensions. And then NADI and AIM, 1.6. Then $67.3 million goes on to the GC. And about $30 million roughly is used primarily, and I'll show you a slide of that in a minute, for K-12 across the division to support local church schools and academies. Of the $30.3 million that's retained at the NAD, here's how they spent it. You can see their administrative expenses there, strategic initiatives, the projects, I'll show a slide on that one, evangelism, the accounting system, GC session set aside, appropriations to Oakwood. Newfoundland, by the way, previously, Oakwood was a GC institution. Now it is a North American division institution. So the North American division is supporting that, as they were also supported by contributions from the GC before. Now they're supporting Oakwood. And also Guam, Micronesia became the mission field for the NAD. And so support is also given to that from the NAD. And you can see the other items there. With respect to the projects, what do they mean by projects? Here's the list. Adult ministries, children ministries, family ministries, health ministries, ministerial resources, sunscreen. Sunscreen is that media production that millennials do out in California in order to support evangelism, and it's a big thing with millennials to develop various kinds of outreach things with using videos and other types of evangelism with using media. Stewardship, Women's Ministries, Youth Projects. The NAD administrative costs, how much? About 1.92% of gross tithe. And remember, the GCs was about 2%. GCs is mandated by policy. And as I said, usually they come in under that. So again, the total administrative costs are fairly low. Of their non-tithe expenditures, as I mentioned, most of that goes through to K to 12 to support church schools. But you can see a bit of other stuff. That total is larger than the total I just showed you because they add to that any interest on their investment earnings. So you can see there they have specials to the union, special appropriations, the Hispanic, regional, Guam, and some goes into reserves. So, what keeps Juan Prestall, who is the GC treasurer, up at night? What does he worry about? Well, the first thing that he worries about is volatile currency markets and exchange rates. As you know, right now, the US dollar is strong, and that means that as the offerings come from the rest of the world, then that money is a less amount in US dollars because of the strong US dollar. So that means, of course, that the more people give from overseas, the more that comes in, the less money the GC has as compared to the past. One of the moves that they just did at this last annual council, in the past, monies that would come from overseas, pick any currency you want to pick, would come over to the GC. The GC would exchange it into US dollars and accept any exchange loss themselves. And then when they turned around and gave an appropriation back to that division, they would give it in US dollars. They would set the amount in US dollars, which of course again meant that the exchange loss, in this case with a strong dollar, was an expense of the general conference. So what they decided to do, they asked, and it was voted, would it be fine, because of course, if you think about it from the perspective of being one of the treasurers in one of the divisions overseas, you might love that arrangement where all the exchanges are take part on the GC's part, not yours. So they voted, however, that these transfers of offerings would stay in the local currency. In other words, the offerings are coming into the GC initially in a local currency. Usually that local currency is the one that is where the division headquarters are, recognizing every division has many currencies within it. So usually they would be talking about that currency, the primary currency. And then it will be given back in that currency, which means, and it makes sense when you think about it, the offering is given in the local currency, it's returned to that division in the local currency. But by doing this, it does save the GC that exchange loss. Right now, it's a loss for sure because of the strong dollar. Another thing that Juan thinks about at night, Brexit, and the effect that this will have on the British pound. I just returned from the Trans-European Division year-end meetings, and it was very interesting to watch as the treasurer of the TED was explaining to his executive committee and the other officers that were there at the meetings this huge unrealized gain in investments, which made the financial statements look wonderful. And he kept saying to them, don't think this is money we can spend. An unrealized gain, of course, means that at the moment, your investments look very good. We all know if the stock market goes up, our investments look really good. But if we don't cash it out, it's an unrealized gain. Well, the same thing happens. Most of the divisions keep their money in US dollars in one pooled amount held at the general conference. Because most of the division's amounts of investment are relatively small, so by pooling it, you can keep your administrative costs very low, because you have a lot of money in one pool, and you can get it done by professional investors, but you don't have to pay so much as you would if it was just you as a small unit. That means, of course, that right now, the strong dollar and the very weak British pound, thanks to Brexit, they look amazing with unrealized gains. But the concern, of course, was that could flip. And that's what the treasurer kept saying. I was there the day after the US elections, and he kept saying, we don't know what the US elections will mean to the market. We don't know what the ultimate decisions about Brexit will mean to the market. We don't know what this will do to the exchange of the dollar. We don't know what this will do to the exchange of the pound. So that is all very volatile right now. And as Juan has explained, it keeps him awake at night. Third area which keeps Juan awake at night. Brazil's currency is in decline right now. And Brazil is the largest membership-wise of the Seventh-day Adventist Church within the South American Division. If you remember from that previous slide, the South American Division is next to the NAD with respect to giving. And Brazil is their largest area of giving, and their currency is very volatile at this moment. That means that something which occurs in Brazil, which might devalue their currency, would have a major effect both on the financial within what happens in South American Division, and also with the money that comes from the South American Division on up to the GC. With the case with Mexico, there the government has blocked currency to all international organizations. So that means, bottom line, that the currency can't get out. So that money, and again, in this case, Mexico has the highest proportion of Adventists in the Inter-American Division. So that tithe, which they are collecting there, cannot be transferred anywhere due to government restrictions. And until the government chooses to unrestrict that money, which of course, not just the GC, but other organizations international are interested in getting their money out of that currency, but until they do, that money is blocked and kept in Mexico. The decline in the tithe, which comes into the North American Division and goes on to the GC, that proportion of tithe more has been kept by the NAD. Over the last 4 years, that increased by 1% of the tithe more being retained by the NAD. And the plan is for the future 4 years that another 1% of the tithe will be retained by the NAD and not sent on to the General Conference. Traditionally, the NAD has sent a large proportion of its tithe to the GC, and what's happening is that tithe percentage being sent on is being reduced, and more of it is being kept by the NAD. It will be going down each of the next 4 years by 0.25% or 1%. And that, of course, has an effect on the GC budget, and they have to plan for that. It means from the NAD's perspective, as Dan Jackson, if he were standing here, would tell you, the NAD has a mission field. We are more of a mission field now than we used to be, because we are much more diverse. We are not so homogeneous. This is not a primarily Christian nation. We have a lot of people coming in here and a lot of separate mission opportunities within the NAD. The GC is recognizing that by increasing the tithe, which is withheld from them and kept in the NAD to support those kinds of activities. Again, it will be decided by the NAD how to use that money. That's part of that saying, as I mentioned, decide it locally. You're going to let the NAD decide how they want to use it. And finally, there is reduced income to the GC of $1 million because the NAD is moving out. I think think everybody in this room would know that. You've seen that it will be done by April. The anticipation is that they will actually be in their new building around the time of spring council, which will be in April. And with that move out, their new building is in Columbia, Maryland, about 20, 25 minutes, depending on the traffic from the GC. And once they move out, the GC will be filling that space with other departments of the GC, but those departments don't pay rent, like the NAD paid rent to the GC for the space. So the GC will reduce its income, its rental income for that portion of the building by $1 million. What do I do and how come I should be able to share this information with you? Well, I am the assistant to the GC treasurer for treasurer training. That means that I talk to division treasurers and union treasurers and conference treasurers around the world. I trained in two divisions this year, 2016, but the next year is the big one because it's the middle of the quinquennium, and all the division treasurers like to get their training done usually in the middle time of the quinquennium. And so next year I've got five divisions to go to, as well as MENA, that's the Middle East, North African area, to do training to promote whatever area of need that that particular division treasurer sees as most important within his division. For example, some of the divisions will say, we really need training in very specific accounting. Some will say, we really need kinds of training which are more philosophical. In some cases, it may deal with things that are part of management of finances, cash flow, management of inventory, fixed assets, internal controls, and sometimes it's looking at larger issues like how can we be more self-supporting and not so dependent on appropriations. So it depends on the division and what it is that they particularly need. Then, as Art already mentioned, I manage this website, moneywise.adventist.org. We probably have over 150 presentations on that website, which treasurers around the world, if they want to do their own training, and we encourage them to do that, then they can use any of these as examples of how training might be done so they can take advantage of whatever's available. I'm done. And now I'd like to start the conversation. You may have any kinds of questions or things to discuss, and I'm open to whatever.
All right, if you have a question, please raise your hand and I will bring the mic to you. Are you able to either try to use see if it's working better or just talk really loud?
Is this working?
No. I'm going to turn it on. And is that your stuff on the floor there? I don't know if that's...
It was on the stand, but thanks.
Probably I'm not to walk on it. I don't know what it is.
Before somebody walks.
Sometimes you get a thumb drive or something.
You donate it yourself. So North America has moved in that direction. I think part of the answer has to be related to North Americans' reluctance to go door to door and people's reluctance to open the door, which was not true. Say, like when I was a kid, we all went, but I don't think anybody's sending their children door to door anymore for obvious reasons. Other parts of the world, not that way, and in those parts of the world, they would still operate on what we consider to be the old system. But mostly in North America, it's just donated.
What's the dollar value?
Well, I didn't bring that specific. I don't know. It's on the, any of you can look on the GC Archives and Statistics website, and you can find it there. Yeah, just go to GC Archives and Statistics, Google that, and it will all come up.
My question is, I've heard in many discussions as far as salaries for pastors are concerned, there is this explanation that they say that all pastors in the church, in the LA church, are paid the same everywhere. And this is they normally encouraging people to give tithe and just showing the authenticity of the tithing system, that this money does not go to the local pastor, it goes to the church, and then it's distributed throughout the churches, and each pastor is paid the same. Now, looking at what you presented and the different figures and how the money is distributed to the different divisions and unions and used according to how they decide how they want. Is that true to say all pastors pay the same? A pastor here in North America and a pastor in Israeli field, are they paid the same?
No.
All pastors are paid the same within that division. So you would not have a pastor, say, in Kenya, East African division, receiving the same salary as Dwight. But the advantage of that is, if I am in a church, Ray and I were in Missouri, in Kirksville, Missouri, my salary is not dependent on the size of the church. He was had a district, but one of those churches had 8 members and one of them had 15. And so therefore, Dwight is not making big bucks because he's at PMC, while a person who's trying to build up the church in Missouri has no money at all to live. So that's the advantage of that, but it is division by division. Yeah.
Union by union sometimes.
And sometimes union by union, depending especially on cost of living. But that's a cost of living.
Country by country, really.
Yes, and
country by country when you get overseas. But if I'm thinking
only North America union.
Yeah. I'm trying to get to
what have the theological operational tensions between North America and the General Conference had any financial impact on the General Conference? And if so, what way?
One of my friends sent me an email this morning and said, now the question that you're bound to get is the one that Dwayne just asked. I don't think it's any question to anybody here about the unity document. Does everybody know what I'm talking about? And I use that term. Yeah, I see lots of heads nodding. It's very interesting at the GC because no specific action, even though desired by some people at the GC at this last annual council, actually occurred with respect to, quote, punishment. That's yet to be decided. If you recall, the answer was, we're going to pray with them for a year and talk about it in annual council of 2017. So the question right now is unknown, yet to be realized, because whatever action may or may not be taken has not yet been stated or decided. How will that affect the church remains also to be seen. It is still future. What people in North America choose to do because of that, fairly, North America is known for being fairly independent,
And I suppose that same independence will come to the front. I can tell you, I personally hope that all of us will remember the worldwide mission of the church and choose other ways to express our disappointment and anger than to decide that suddenly we're not going to give anymore, because the giving is a much bigger issue in terms of the mission of the church. And so I would wish, frankly, that would be my wish, I'm an N of one, that we would consider other ways to express any disappointment and frustration rather than choosing to doing it through the offering plate. But what will happen remains to be seen.
This is kind of tangential to that, but I'm wondering, does the church have any figures, or has what knowledge the church has as far as the financial doings of these independent ministries, people that are Adventists and probably even go to an Adventist church, but they give, do we know how much money is given to those independent ministries?
Generally not, because the independent ministries are very reluctant to provide any information about what's actually coming to them. So they really want to keep that pretty quiet. I think that the General Conference and the NAD is very aware of the fact that there's a huge drain in terms of people wishing to support independent ministries more than they want to support. If you support your local church, it's going to go up through the normal channels. So if you choose to do an independent ministry instead of that, and I think there's no question everybody understands that's large, but how large, when they won't disclose information, nobody really knows how much. I think that any number of people could get together and have some kind of statement about how much they give, and you could make some guesses and then you could make some judgments. But as far as official on the official independent ministries group, they don't disclose how much money they have. They like to keep it secret.
Get Kathy. What percent? I think back in the day, the North American Division used to provide like 50% of support for the GC. Do you know what that percentage is now?
Right now, if you look at how much the World Divisions, I think about 4 or 5 years ago, it tipped. And more is supported worldwide than the NAD gives. But it is still very large. There's no question when I say it tips, it didn't tip huge. So without a question, the bulk of it comes from that, but it is no longer more than 50%. I think it's running around, if I remember correctly, and this is not something to quote because my accountant wants to be more precise, it's more like 48% or something like that now. And the good news from everyone's perspective is that the World Church is growing both economically and in terms of membership, so that more can come from them. And I think everybody is happy about that. The question has oftentimes been related, I don't have any theological reasons for this, but often the gospel spreads the fastest through the poor. And the poor they may give more percentage-wise than the rich, but they don't have a lot when it comes in. However, the widow's mite always manages to give more than it looks like it's giving, and I think what we're seeing is that's happening. Yeah.
Does Adventist retirement have any kind of separate endowment, or is it dependent on income from tithe every year?
If you look at the defined benefit, which is the one, like the defined contribution is what did you give yourself, and then that's going to be invested according to your own directions. So with the defined benefit, I think, is what you're talking about, the one which stopped in 2000.
I'm concerned before that. I'm concerned with those of us with white hair.
That's right. That's right. That's the one all us white-haired people have. That's right. That's right. And I'm very concerned about it as well, for obvious reasons. That was always intended, when it was started way back, to be a pay-as-you-go, because of course at that time everyone assumed that it would be funded out of tide and would continue to be funded far into the future. In 2000, as I mentioned, that was changed. So right now we have the defined benefit plan for people who worked for the church and however many years of service you had up to 2000. The next 10 years are crucial to that fund because between now and approximately 2026, many people with some large proportion of work for the church prior to 2000 will be retiring. I'm looking around the room. Hello, all my fellow people. Okay. And as they retire, they will be taking money out of the fund. Actuarial studies show that probably after 2026, first of all, not as much would have been earned prior to 2000, this should already be 26 years into the defined contribution system. And so the draw on the defined benefit plan will be much less. The next 10 years are crucial. And that's really why we already saw the NAD is putting in a large amount. Every conference is putting in a large amount across the NAD. Institutions are putting in. So really, they're paying double. They're paying to make up the defined benefit contributions that they would have done anyway, plus they're doing a match for defined contribution. And what will then happen is anticipated in about 10 years, that will not be as needy because the fund itself less draw and will be sufficient. So that's, I can tell you the North American Division is adamant and the board of the NAD retirement plan, and I sit on that board, is committed to keeping that fund solvent for the retirees of the church. They see it as a commitment which is absolutely essential to keep because these people have already given their lives to work for the church. So the support of that is very strong. Way in the back. I feel like that tooth decay commercial. I'm coming to you.
Thank you, Anne. I'd like to go back three or four steps regarding the differences of opinion between the General Conference and the North American Division, particularly some unions. Given the structure of the church that you laid out at the very first, what punishment could the General Conference inflict upon a union, let's say? Could they refuse to accept the money that they're sending?
I'm going to be honest, I can hardly imagine that happening. That would be really wild. I would encourage everybody here, if you haven't already looked at it, to take a look at what George Knight wrote. It's on the Spectrum website on unions. Yeah, it is. It's excellent. And it really tells you the value of unions. And the answer, which I personally, this is a personal observation here, not official, the fact that there's nothing they can do given the current structure of the church is why nothing happened at annual council. Because there's nothing they can do because the decision to discipline any union or conference lies with the division, not with the General Conference. And therefore, unless the North American Division decides to discipline, which of course we already know the North American Division supports these unions, but they are the ones who would choose to discipline, not the GC.
Wouldn't it be more the constituents of the union that would discipline?
Exactly, that's the point.
The conferences.
And the point is, the constituents are the ones who voted it, so that's right, that's right.
Which way?
A couple of your slides had a category called tithe exchange. Is this some sort of synonym for money laundering? Or what is the concept of this work?
I put that slide on there on purpose, thinking maybe somebody would pick up on that. Thanks, Art. Usually this is considered to be money laundering. That's usually the way it's looked at. But it's not. It's not. When you think about it, this is a mixture of facts. I'll try to separate fact from opinion. The facts are, if I give $100 in tithe, and $50 in offerings, then my tithe has very explicit things which it can be used for. These have been identified from mostly the writings of Ellen White, but also some scripture, but mostly where Ellen White made very explicit statements. For example, she makes a statement, church buildings are not to be used, tithe is not to be used to build church buildings. Other monies should be used for that, other offerings. Okay, so let's say that my tithe is very huge as a proportion of a particular division's income. That particular division gets a lot of tithe, but not so much in offerings. But they need to build some church buildings because they're growing very fast. Well, where are they going to get the money for that? Now, there may be another division that has tithe, but huge offerings, which is really kind of like unrestricted money, if you think about it in that way. The offerings, unless they're given specifically, like if I give a Sabbath school offering, that goes to missions. But other offerings can be unrestricted. So what I want to do is I want to exchange some of my restricted money, the tithe, for some unrestricted money so I can build these church buildings. And that's really what's going on. The advantage of that is that any one place in the world is not limited to the resources only in that division. It is shares across all of the divisions so that the mission can be accomplished in the best way without running into problems that may occur because of that particular location. An example. Years ago when I used to audit, the Greater New York Conference had a lot of small churches, very small churches, all language bound. Because in New York City, the churches were definitely language bound, and so you had a small church in just about every language in the world, it seemed to me, scattered across there. That meant that when the money came into the Greater New York Conference, the tithe money could be used to pay for pastors. But they used up all their tithe and they needed more because they had so many tiny churches, but offering money was coming in. So they would say, can we take some unrestricted money and get some restricted money and continue to pay our pastors with money which is restricted for that purpose? And then we would be happy then to share with others. So that is an example, but that's what it does. That's what it does. Quentin.
Are there any studies done about the demographics of the age of the people making the tithe donations?
There's no question. I've not seen any studies, but I know what they say, but I haven't seen the exact numbers. The millennial generation is not giving. Bottom line. Many of them, first of all, I suppose, would say, well, I've got all my school bills, so I'm not giving. We see the same kind of thing, frankly, with some of the millennials not taking the full match when they go to work for any organization on retirement. Because I've heard many retirement seminars, not for the church, but many others where they're saying, please be sure that the people graduating from your institutions remember when they go to work to at least put as much money aside for your pension to get the match from your employer. And many of them are not doing that. They're just kind of saying, all of this is far away and long gone, and I'm not doing it. So we don't see millennials taking many steps that are more traditionally taken by people who were baby boomers or Gen Xers. And so I think the same is true. I think that that's a major issue with the church, because obviously, if the congregation, remember I said at the beginning, the most important people in the church are the ones in the pews, and if the ones in the pews are not giving, then there's no money to share anywhere for anything. So that is a very great concern. How to reach them is the next question. And I think obviously it has to be continued education, whether that's happening within a school or within the church or wherever it may be happening, so that they can understand what is happening when you give your offerings. Otherwise, it's kind of like, if nobody told me it made any difference, why would I bother to do it? And some of that is some of it, but I think the church is also trying very hard. One example, I've noticed, the Adventist Review right now always traditionally would give a free subscription for a year to new members. They're doing the same now for millennials. So I see that as a beginning of trying to make sure that they feel part of the church.
There's a follow-up comment on that. I guess it's, you millennials are social justice warriors. And
yes.
They, you know, I get the feeling that they're going to be the ones that are going to attack the system by not giving with regards to this theological debate that we're having.
Well,
they're just not going to participate.
I think that's particularly true in North America. Whether or not all millennials around the world are that same way, I don't know. That remains to be seen.
And one of your slides suggested that the some of the reversion went to K-12 operations. Some of us have felt for a while that our educational system is one of the most potent evangelism tools that we have. Is there any thought toward or rationale for using tithe to help pay some of the costs, perhaps even considering our teachers as pastors in their work?
A portion of the tithe now is used for educational purposes. It's usually explicitly directed toward those individuals that are seen in a more direct pastoral role, although I would agree with you, Alice, that I think teachers have a strong pastoral role beyond the ones that seem to be defined that way. But the way it is defined, Bible teachers are paid out of tithe. Dormitory deans, usually a portion of their tithe is considered to be tithe. And administrators in like an academy where many times the guidance counselors and some of those are considered also to be tied. The usual percentage that is used as kind of across the board is a 30% is kind of expected. It's like roughly 30% of that total salary cost would be considered to be able to be paid out of tithe.
Could you share with us an amusing anecdote from your travels around the world?
An amusing anecdote.
I'm sure you've seen some creative accounting.
Larry's over here laughing. Oh, I can tell you one, which was, I think that's why Larry's probably sitting over here, because he did laugh. He laughed so hard that I thought about shooting him on the spot, because I couldn't keep a straight face. Anyway, I was in one of the African divisions, and the division president had talked about really a miracle that he was even there that morning. I had just arrived and I was going to do a week of seminars, and they were introducing me and all this, and he talked about coming in the night before, and there had been a person had been hit by a car in one of the villages, and of course the villagers were very angry, and a riot had come. They were throwing stones and breaking windshields, and how he really felt, and that he had been protected, that he was even able to be there that morning. So I made an assumption that that was the worship talk, and that I would be introduced next. Well, no, then he launched into his prepared worship talk. And he chose the text there in Joshua, where they have, the children of Israel have just come across the Jordan, and they're all going to be circumcised because they haven't been circumcised for 40 years and because of sin, you know. And now they're going into the promised land and they will be circumcised. And, you know, he's a very powerful preacher. And he was into it. He was into it. And he started saying, "And Dr. Gibson is with us. She's sharpening the flint knives. She's going to circumcise you to be the kind of treasurers that can take us to the promised land." And Larry was sitting in the back. He was falling off his chair. He was laughing so hard. And I'm sitting there thinking, there's no way I'm standing up there right now. And I'm going to say, "Oh, here I am." So, you never really know. You never really know what's happening. I will tell you, fortunately, they had to go through the audience of the treasurers and introduce each one in which conference and union they were from, and I could sit there going, but I also could not look at Larry. Every time I looked at him, he was off the chair again, rolling in the audience. So anyway, thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's more.
This is more of a clarification for my own part. What was the General Conference relationship with the Adventist Health System as far as any financial support at all, or is that completely separated now?
The Adventist Health System is totally separated from the General Conference with respect to any financial, like the GC is not subsidizing Adventist Health Systems in North America. They're on their own. I understand what you're saying. Yes, and I think probably the GC would welcome any offerings from. At this moment, no, they're not, that I know of. Now, that doesn't mean they're not, but individuals, of course, would be giving offerings. One thing that I really want to commend the Adventist Health System, and I'm thinking now primarily of Sunbelt, the largest one, is the one I'm most familiar with, and I'm not as familiar with West Adventist Health Systems West. But Sunbelt is very, very anxious that the mission of the Adventist Church be maintained. And so one way they do that is they come and recruit a lot at all the Adventist colleges with the purpose of developing their administrative teams. And I don't mean just at the top, I also mean in their departments and throughout their hospitals, to be Adventist. And they explicitly are concentrating on mission and making sure that these people understand the mission of Adventist Health, which is to make man whole. And they're very explicit about making sure that the mission of the hospitals is not lost through the process. So that's where I see them connecting most closely with the church. But as far as money flowing back and forth, not that I'm aware of, although I certainly could stand to be corrected.
I had a question about the demographic patterns of giving in North America. Do you have any sense? Well, we see figures of the average amount donated by a member, but that's an average. Do you have any sense for what proportion comes from, you know, the small offerings, and what percent comes from very large, a small number of large donors? Kind of overtones of our political campaign.
Yeah. As you all would probably know, under Robert Falkenberg's leadership at the GC, there was a huge push for a lot of large donors to give sums to major projects. And many of those projects were ones which were overseas that he would particularly promote, and many of the big names with large amounts of money did that and gave things. For example, I remember the first time I was in Russia, going out to Zyosky and seeing this huge new library which had been built with funds from McNeilis. So that kind of giving was encouraged, particularly by his administration. Jan Paulsen's administration did not encourage that kind of individualized giving, although people might still choose to do that, but he was not encouraging that in quite the same way. So what we now see is there are large donors, but I don't think the push to have large donors fund a specific project in one part of the world is as great today as it was in the past, and the desire is more for using the regular channels of the church to give, because behind that, what happens if you get it for one particular area? Several things could happen. For example, the area which has the best PR and marketing gets the most money, but that might not be the one that really needed it the most in terms of what they had available, local resources that just happened to have the best marketing. Likewise is sustainability. For example, that same library, I remember seeing it. It was a gorgeous building, but there were no books in it. And no money had been given for books. And the ability of Zyosky and EuroAsia at that time, and I'm now talking in the 90s, was almost impossible to get the books into the library. So here was this gorgeous building, but the sustainability of the project was hampered because it hadn't been done in a way which then could provide additional funds to complete the project for total use. So some of that giving, you get the great PR, but you don't get the sustainability of the organization behind it. So I think that's part of what's happening. Sometimes questions come up, I could mention, for the Colson tithe that you may have heard about. Some people are nodding their heads, some are going no. We should be familiar with Colson. Our entrance to Andrews was a donation from Colson. And there's some endowed funds from him, endowed chairs. So he also, when he passed away, his organization was sold, and a huge tithe for that was given directly to the General Conference. That money, everywhere around the world, can apply for special projects for that money, and it will then be voted to be given to them. So this idea of special projects being able to be funded is there. And right now, divisions around the world are encouraged to put in special requests for any kind of special project that maybe they couldn't fund otherwise, and get funds for that from that pot. Cheryl.
Say North American Division also has that option to do so, and does. 13th Sabbath offering goes equally to North America as it does to other divisions. Special funding, the global mission monies, many other types of monies and funding are as open to the North American Division as they are to any other division, and they do take advantage of that.
The idea, of course, of using that in that way, usually when you put in money, you put in a request for that kind of money, then you need to have some kind of plan for sustainability, so that it's not just something that starts out and then doesn't get rightly finished, which would be, you know, almost the saddest piece. The money is spent but didn't accomplish what you wanted it to accomplish. Okay.
Pertaining to media, I think one of your slides show that there is some money given to media as far as for church. Now, Hope Channel, that's part of the church structure. They receive money from that. But also, Hope Channel advertises in ways that people can give directly to that. How does that work as far as the giving of the church, and how is that part of the system?
Monies that would be given, donated directly to Hope Channel, would go to Hope Channel. And then on top of that, they would get a subsidy from the GC. So it's, yeah. In the same way, if I want to give money to Andrews University for, maybe for operating, or let's use it, a general gift, unrestricted. So I give money to Andrews University, but then the GC is still giving a subsidy to Andrews University. But I can still give money if I wish to. And Andrews, I think, will be happy to receive it. Last time I checked, anyway. So it's the same kind of situation. Yeah. Good.
Thank you very much. I think we've all learned a lot, and we appreciate your willingness and frankness and articulateness and sharing with us. So, should we express our thanks?